You're listening to the Beauty Brain Show, where real scientists answer your beauty questions. And now, here's Randy and Perry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show, Graham. I'm Randy Schuler.
And I'm Perry Romanowski.
And this is episode 103 of the Beauty Brain Show. Today you're going to learn how to save money by buying used makeup, if eating toothpaste can kill you, and which human body part is the source of a new anti-aging ingredient.
Wow.
But before we get to all that, I think we have another travelogue from Perry.
Oh, yeah, Randy. I just got back from a trip to Dallas, where I was one of the speakers at the Southwest Society of Cosmetic Chemists meeting. Oh. It was an interesting day of talks, and actually, I learned a couple of things.
Really?
Yeah. First, when you're going to juggle on a stage, make sure that the lighting is right so it doesn't blind you and make you drop. As part of my talks, I usually will do a little juggling thing, but
first of all, I'm sorry to hear you had a drop on stage. That must have been embarrassing. But secondly, how do you sort of make that make sense in the context of a cosmetic science talk?
Well, I always say that in my talks, I try to be, my mission is entertain, inspire, and educate. And then just to make sure I get one of those, I do the entertaining start right up front.
Oh, I see. I thought maybe it was like, I'm going to explain how the P orbitals work in a certain compound, and here's what they look like.
I used to do that. It was too complicated.
Go ahead.
So I actually did learn a few cosmetic science things.
All right.
Well, one of the hot topics there was microbeads in cosmetics.
Oh, yeah. Big ban coming up. Yeah.
Exactly. There was a regulatory person who went through the history of banning, and the big manufacturers have a problem because not only are states getting in with rules, actual counties in states are coming up with rules. And they're banning the things right away.
And there's some federal regulations on top of that.
Well, that was what the big manufacturers are trying to get federal regulation passed. That way the law is the same around the entire country.
Ah, okay.
And so they're looking to have these things phased out by 2017. So probably by 2017, that'll actually be banned.
It's pretty aggressive. And quite unusual for an industry that's completely unregulated like cosmetics.
Go figure. But you know what? The thing I learned was that the beads actually do have an exfoliating effect. I really didn't think they did.
Right.
But there was some research presented suggesting that there was an impact on exfoliation compared to not having the beads in a body wash.
Hmm, okay.
However, upon further questioning, I always posed a question to the person who presented the research, and they showed that there was exfoliation only using exaggerated conditions, so not conditions that you'd actually, like an actual person would do, but they were trying to show a difference between plastic beads and the natural exfoliation particles, like walnut shells.
Sure.
And they were able to show an effect, but they had to use this exaggerated lab technique to show exfoliation. So the reality is, I stand by my statement that this is really just a gimmick and you're not actually getting exfoliation despite what the lab data was shown in these conditions.
So I wonder how they exaggerated that, because you could either like up the dose of the particles maybe, or just increase the pressure that's used, or both, I guess.
They did the update. Well, they used 6% was the particle load in the body wash.
And what's a typical load? Probably less than 1, right?
Yeah, 1%, maybe most. So yeah, they do 6%. And then also the motion they were using for the washing piece, they didn't use like a washcloth. They just used a slow motion finger.
So. It sounds dirty when you say it that way.
Sometimes body wash work is a little dirty. Well, there are a couple other things I learned. I learned that the EU is going to force more labeling of allergens. You know how right now there's that requirement that you have to label 26 allergens?
Right.
Well, they're going to go up to 89.
Holy crap.
And in fact, the science organization that was pushing the new labeling, they wanted over 130, but the regulators have cut it to 89. But 89, so pretty much it's going to affect every fragrance that's out there. They're going to have to list their allergens on their labels. So the cosmetic labels in the EU can become really long now.
They're going to have to come to some, you know, off-label agreement for some of this, right? You literally aren't going to be able to fit all that on pack.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that would be my suspicion. And actually, the regulations were supposed to go into effect in June of 2015, and they haven't gone into effect yet. So we'll see where that ends up.
Interesting.
And then the final thing that I saw was that the talk was sort of about natural and the impact on the cosmetic industry.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an ingredient they talked about that was derived from algae. So they were using algae derivatives instead of coconut oil or petroleum to make cocamidopropyl betaines. So algae could really be the next big ingredient for cosmetics.
We've been hearing for a while that could be hot, so it's interesting to hear one real application. You know,
finally, speaking of hot, it was a little hot there in Dallas. And you know the thing I did observe about Dallas?
Mm-hmm.
It's just not a very walkable city. They don't have sidewalks anywhere.
What?
So go figure. Dallas needs more sidewalks. That's what I need to say.
I have to admit, I do enjoy this travelogue segment. We had a couple of weeks ago, dry skin in Denver, natural products in Connecticut. It's like, and now Dallas, it's like, you know, where in the world is Perry Romanowski? we'll have to rebrand this segment.
Yeah, indeed. I do tend to travel. This is my travel season.
All right, so before we get to our beauty science news stories today, let's take a moment, as we always like to do, and give a shout out to our listeners who have written iTunes reviews for us.
Yeah, we always appreciate a good iTunes review, and it helps people find the show and brings our ratings up in iTunes. So here's one from MacBook Andrea from Canada. Yeah. She says, always looking forward to the next episode, entertaining and educational at the same time. Yeah. And that doesn't even require me to juggle.
Hillbark says, thanks to the Beauty Brains, I know that just because a product is expensive and makes impressive claims, that does not mean it actually works better. Thank you for helping me be a more informed consumer and save lots of money.
Oh, nice. That's nice. And then Jigs CB says, I'm so glad I came upon this podcast. I've been binge listening for a couple of weeks now. I have learned so much about the chemicals in our products, misleading marketing, and realize I've been playing right into the hype without any factual basis. I could definitely do without the games at the beginning of the show, and sometimes I think Randy can be a bit mean to Perry, which gets old, but otherwise, this is one of the few podcasts that I listen to pretty much every day and highly recommend it.
Wow. I'm kind of taken aback by that comment. I mean, do you think any of my kidding around comes across as being mean towards you? Shut up.
Well, you know, we appreciate all iTunes reviews, and I certainly appreciate it when people realize how cruel my partner can be. I mean, just because I like to clip my nails outside of the bathroom does not...
That's your other partner.
Oh.
I think they were talking about me.
Oh, yeah, indeed.
All right. No, it's all in good fun.
It is.
It's just part of the characters that we play here on the show.
So. Exactly. We're completely different off mic.
I don't know who this mic is, but all right. Okay, well, Perry, should we move on to beauty science news?
Love beauty science news. Let's do it.
Hey, have you heard of this company, Glambot?
I think I saw their name in one of my RSS feeds.
Well,
but, yeah.
Apparently they make super-powered evil robots disguised as beautiful women. Oh, wait, no, hold it. That's something I saw in a James Bond movie. I'm sorry. No. Glambot is a startup company that apparently sells like $1 million a year of pre-owned makeup.
I just don't get this at all.
So here's the deal. This company was founded a couple of years ago by Karen Horiuchi. I may be butchering that pronunciation. But they buy used makeup and then resell it online. Now, they clean and sanitize every product before resale. And apparently they use either heat or alcohol to sterilize containers and in some cases to, quote, remove layers of product to get down to a fresh one. Right? Okay. So skimming the top off, I guess.
Sure.
So I went to their website and I looked up their guidelines because I'm curious sort of how the mechanics of this thing works. So here are their guidelines. First of all, they only buy products from their, quote, accepted brand list, and there are 60 major brands covered there. They do not purchase drugstore brands such as CoverGirl, Rimmel, Revlon, and Wet n Wild. Now,
all right.
I don't know why. Maybe just because those are so cheap to begin with, there's no margin to resell them, maybe? I don't know.
That would be my guess, yeah.
If you are going to sell products to Glambot, you have to have at least 20 used products to sell at one time.
So they're not just Joe Schmo off the street, got this extra thing in my cabinet selling it, right?
Right, and I think most of her sellers then are people in the industry, like beauty bloggers they mentioned, right? Who, you know, these are people who receive a bunch of free samples you can't use. I mean, we have that problem to some extent, right? We get stuff in the mail that we can't really use.
Right, right.
And if it's, you know, if it's a brand new unopened product, that's one thing. I mean, that makes sense. They said some of their products that come in are barely touched. but you know, a lot of them are used.
Yeah. I mean, you could understand, I mean, but this was mostly color cosmetics. So if it was like a bottle of skin lotion, it seems less troubling to me, but this is like color cosmetics.
That's a good point. They will only resell items with reusable applicators. They won't sell items with reusable applicators. So like a mascara with a mascara wand in it, they wouldn't resell that.
Okay.
But things like lipstick and blush are okay, I guess, because they can get down to that clean layer. But would you buy a lipstick that somebody else has already used?
I wouldn't.
Furthermore, they do not resell nail polish or fragrances, which strikes me as a little odd because those are the two products that are less likely to spoil. You know, there's no water. They're really self-preserving. So I would think those would be least problematic, but okay.
Yeah.
The product has to be at least 50% full, and, you know, how full it is determines the price. The product has to be clean and free from contaminants like dirt, mold, or other foreign objects. Okay, I guess they just eyeball that.
I know. Yeah. It's not like you can run it through a bacteria screen.
Right. And then finally, they do not accept expired products. Now, most cosmetics don't have an expiration date, so how does that work?
Well, the ones in the EU would.
Yeah, but I'm not even sure they're even in
right.
the EU, so
right.
I don't know. I mean, they have period after opening in the EU, so there you would at least give you something to go by, but in the US,
yes.
unless it's an over-the-counter drug cosmetic, it's not going to have an expiration date.
You're
so,
right.
I don't know. It's kind of puzzling. I can think of a couple of advantages to this in a program. I mean, you know, you can pick up some great products at a reasonable price. You can also make a few bucks selling products that you're never going to use.
Yeah.
But I can also think of four disadvantages, and let me name those four. Number one, Staphylococcus aureus. Number two, Pseudomonas arginosa. Three, E. coli. And four, Staphylococcus epidermidis. Those are the most four common types of bacteria that are found in cosmetics. And, you know, we've talked about this before. They can cause anything from skin rash to eye infections to bloody diarrhea.
Yeah.
weren't you in a death metal band called Bloody Diarrhea?
Yeah, I was a drummer. That one never went anywhere.
So, you know, given these risk factors, I'm curious to see how this business works out in the long run and how long it'll be before somebody sues them out of business for selling a contaminated product.
I tell you what, the idea of recycling products and not wasting things, it sounds good,
great.
But boy, it just doesn't seem safe to me. And when they say that they disinfect the things, like, how are they doing that?
heat and alcohol, they said, which...
Right, which could also...
Sounds like your trip to Dallas.
Exactly. But it could also... ruin the effectiveness of the products.
Depending on what they do and how, yeah, it's all very murky to me, but we'll see what happens.
Well, your story reminded me of a story that I just read, and I'm going to take this one now. The headline was, Old Makeup Contains Meningitis Bacteria.
That did not make my top four list, but great.
Turns researchers at the London Metropolitan University did a study on some makeup products that they received and found that a number of the samples were that were out of date. So there is some dating thing in the UK. Mm-hmm. And they found that the makeup tested positive for Enterococcus faecalis bacteria, which is known to cause meningitis.
Hmm.
In this study, they examined only five products and found four of them tested positive for the bacteria.
Oh, wow.
And the products studied included lip gloss, blush, lipstick, and mascara.
Wow.
And notably, the lip gloss, which was not expired, it was a year old, but it wasn't expired yet, mm-hmm. It still tested positive for meningitis bacteria.
Wow.
So, I mean, that previous story we just talked about, that would be enough to scare me away from using anything from them. But what does this really mean? So it probably means for consumers, it's probably a good idea to not use makeup that is, say, more than a year old. You know, I know there are a number of consumers who do this, you know, that's just in their cabinet and they just use it till it's gone. But, you know, they are taking some risk from exposure and it can be bacteria like meningitis causing bacteria.
That's scary.
Normally, cosmetics are tested for stability for 1 year. So, you know, if a product is older than a year, you probably want to stop using it.
Well, wait, a year? I mean, 1 to 3 years, I think, is more typical.
Yeah, but I'm talking about color cosmetics.
Oh, okay. All right. I was talking about products in general. Okay.
Right. But like color cosmetics, like the ones that were tested in this study, you know, that stuff gets exposed to it's a lot of times exposed to the bacteria on your face and then it goes back into the container.
Yeah,
and,
no, that's a good point. If you're talking about like a bottle of shampoo or a hand lotion where you're basically squeezing some out and you're not intruding into the package,
right.
Much less likely to contaminate it and those things will last much longer. You know,
it's
funny. We just had a question in our forum. Someone asked me if they could use some old nail polish they had, and they had a couple of bottles from 2003 and a couple of bottles from 1993.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's not likely to be to really cause a problem with bacteria because those are all solvent-based and nothing's going to grow in there. But still, there's so many things that could go wrong, right? Color settling, evaporation of the solvent, drying it out, it gets clumpy. Like, you shouldn't be using stuff that's 20 years old.
Yeah, it doesn't cost that much to get nail polish. There was one other thing that occurred to me about this story. This just demonstrates to me that I would just avoid any product that claims to be preservative-free.
Oh, no kidding.
Right? You know, there are reasons we put preservatives in cosmetics, and disease-causing microbes are just not something that you want to put in your lipstick, you know?
Well, actually, then let me tell you a story about a preservative then. Yeah.
All right.
And actually, this has been in my queue for a while, and I haven't gotten to this yet, but did you know that there's an anti-wrinkle cream ingredient that may actually cause wrinkles?
Really?
Uh-huh. Yeah, and that ingredient is a preservative. It's methylparaben.
Oh. Come on.
Well, I mean, this may be true if we can extrapolate high-dose in vitro and animal studies to humans, which, you know, it gets a bit sketchy when you do that. But let me explain. I read this article a while back on prevention.com, and they were saying they referenced a couple of studies, but they're saying that some ingredients of, you know, dermatological formulations like preservatives can cause skin irritation and allergy. And so this one particular study aimed to clarify the effects of daily use of methylparaben on human skin. So they measured concentrations of methylparaben on the stratum corneum using some sort of GCMS cup method. And they determined that, you know what, you know, you can build up some unmetabolized methylparaben in your skin. So fact number one, it seems to be true that methylparaben can stay on your skin. I think this was after a month of daily application. So in other words, it doesn't all wash off. Okay, fine.
Right.
Well, then there were some other studies done by different researchers, some on mouse skin and then some on just human skin cells in vitro. And they showed that methylparaben can have a number of effects. And let me quote a couple of them. It can decrease the proliferation ability of the keratinocytes, so how, you know, new skin cells grow. And it can reduce the expression of an enzyme that helps make hyaluronic acid and collagen. So those things are both essential to keeping your skin nice and plump and wrinkle-free. So I guess the theory is they're sort of putting together these two pieces, right? It's like methylparaben can stay on your skin even after you're washing it off. And in cell cultures and on animal skin, it can have these effects which could lead to wrinkles. So putting those together, the researchers and the person who wrote the article said, you know, you shouldn't be using methylparaben in anti-aging products because it could make your skin worse. Now, I mean, how do you react to this? Yeah,
it seems like quite a jump.
Well, you know, these are, you know, at least fairly reputable scientific studies. But again, considering they're linking two things, there's no evidence that directly says methylparaben is causing these problems.
Right.
You know, and secondly, there's no context for the effect that methylparaben may have on wrinkles. Is it, you know, 100 times worse than being exposed to UV radiation? Does it cause, you know, 10 times more wrinkles than smoking a pack of cigarettes? Or is it some very minor effect over time that, you know, basically you wouldn't even notice? So there's no sense of how bad it is. I mean, you know, it's probably not causing more wrinkles than, you know, not hydrating your skin and, you know, and drinking alcohol. Right. So if you're really worried about wrinkles, there are probably many other things you can do. You know, staying out of the sun is another one, rather than just avoiding this preservative. Because, you know, if you jump to another product that's either not preserved, to your point a minute ago, or preserved with something different that maybe hasn't been studied in this regard yet, you know, you may be going from the frying pan into the fire. You don't know if it's better or worse, or are you going to open yourself to, you know, bacterial contamination because you're using a less effective preservative. So it's not as simple as, hey, here's a study that says this might be bad, let's run away from it. It's never quite that superficial.
At best, what you have here is a hypothesis of a thing to study, but that's way too early to give advice that, that's already assuming we've studied it, we've got this positive result, so you should just avoid it. So it's way too early for that kind of advice.
Exactly. And then one final thing on this. The article also mentioned that, and I'll quote here, by law, the ingredient is always included on the label, but it does go by some sneaky names. And then they list, some of the names are like Metabin, Methylchemosept, Moldex, Paradol, Tegacept M, so on and so forth. Now, what's wrong with this statement, right? So they're implying that the sneaky big beauty companies are really going to use this ingredient and then, you know, have it hide behind, you know, some synonym.
Right.
In actuality, yes, you know, all chemicals really have multiple names. Some of these are trade names from the company that sells them. Some of them are just alternate chemical names. But not only do you have to put the ingredient, you know, list the ingredient name on the package by law, but you also have to use the name according to the International Nomenclature of Cosmetic Ingredients. You don't just get to pick which name you use.
Right.
Unless who might be using the wrong name for a chemical on their package?
Well, small companies who haven't got a regulatory person to give them the right rules on how they're supposed to be labeling.
Exactly. So this isn't a case where big beauty is trying to dupe you into using a secret ingredient that's bad for you. Because I'll tell you what, all the big beauty companies are using the right name because they know they can get in trouble for it. So it's the small companies who are either know they can get away with it and don't care, or maybe they just don't know what the proper name is. But you're not going to see this from the bigger companies.
My guess is the I don't know thing. Because it just doesn't seem like the small company would have to know that there's some sort of issue, which there really isn't an issue,
right?
Or at least on, and then they would have to be, then they'd have to say, oh, well, let's use this trade name because it doesn't sound, sounds crazy.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, all this microbe talk, Randy, reminds me of the book that I just started listening to.
Oh, what's that?
It's a book called On Immunity.
Oh,
I forget the author, but somebody I do this volunteering thing, and this girl was telling me about this book about vaccines that she was reading. And whenever I heard it was a book about vaccines not written by a scientist, I kind of bristle because I'm figuring it's just going to be one of these scaremongering chemicals are dangerous and don't vaccinate your kid book. But I'm always willing to hear what people say about things. So I picked up the book On Immunity, the audiobook, through audible.com. You know, the Beauty Brains has a deal with audible.com. You can sign up for them for a month, and then you get a free audiobook. And if you use our link, we'll have that link in the show notes, right?
Yes, we will.
So I think it's audibletrial.com/beautybrain.
I'll put it in the notes, okay?
That's a good idea. And actually, if you just click on the notes from your phone, there will be that link right there. You can click right there.
Wow.
So anyway, it's a fascinating book on immunity, and it actually was a surprise to me. It was somebody rationally going through what the science is saying, and this was more of a writer than a scientist. But they were giving some good advice and looking at the history of it. So I encourage you to check out that book or check out anything from audible.com using the link that the Beauty Brains had helped support the show.
All right.
We should be like professional pluggers with these fabulous commercials.
Because we're so good at it.
You know what we're better at, though? Beauty science stories. So here's a story about research that is questioning the usefulness of antibacterial soaps.
Oh.
So in a study published in the Journal of Antimicrobial Chemotherapy, researchers found that hand cleaners with the antibiotic triclosan were no more effective at killing germs than regular soap. Now, the way they proved this is that they exposed 20 different strains of bacteria to a formulation of either, so they do regular soap, and then a sample of that same soap that had 0.3% triclosan.
Okay.
And it turns out the bacteria was exposed for 20 seconds, which was to simulate hand washing, and they found that there was no difference in terms of killing between the two treatments.
And that's consistent with what we've heard before. Just good hand washing is quite effective.
Exactly. And to support that, they did a second experiment in which they had people use either the triclosan hand wash or just a hand wash. They counted the bacteria on their hands before the washing, and then they counted it after, and the difference was that there was no difference. So there really is no benefit to using a triclosan hand wash. So, you know, using antibacterial hand wash is just, there's just no evidence that you should be doing that.
And there's some evidence that it may be bad if it's helping to create resistant strains of bacteria. So,
yeah, you know, considering that we only have a few antibacterial agents like triclosan, if you use it too frequently, yeah, the bacteria can become resistant and then we got nothing.
Yeah, and we got a problem.
So as far as consumers go, I would say you should avoid using antibacterial soap.
All right. Well, lest our listeners think it's an all antibacterial episode today, it seems like we're getting into a theme there. Let me change it up a little bit and try and answer the question, can eating toothpaste kill your kid?
Oh, no.
Yeah, I love questions like this because they can be answered with dimensional analysis, right? You go through and you look at how much is there and how much it takes to kill, and you do the conversion of the units, and boom, you can get to a fact-based answer. And, you know, we've done a couple of these before, right? Remember we answered the question, can your skin absorb enough oil from a moisturizer to make you fat?
That's right. That was fun.
And then can you absorb enough caffeine from a bar of soap to get a caffeine buzz? So this is another one of those. Now, this one was actually done by our good friend Colin Sanders over at his blog, Colin's Beauty Pages.
Sure. And you can hear Colin on show 101, right?
That's right. And so I'm stealing this from him, but it's a great analysis. So he came across this apparently from a tweet from a celebrity dentist, whatever that means, who said that, quote, there is enough fluoride in a standard tube of toothpaste that if ingested can be fatal to two small children. So that is, as I like to say, a testable proposition.
Yes.
So let's look at the numbers to find out the truth. So first of all, it is true that if you ingest enough fluoride, it can be dangerous. I mean, even, you know, relatively small amounts can cause, you know, some stomach ache. There's a condition called fluorosis that affects children, where if you have, if you're a kid and before your teeth are fully formed and you ingest too much fluoride, you can get a mottled effect on your teeth.
Okay.
So that's something to look out for. But in terms of, you know, causing fatality, we need to look at a value that is called the lowest toxic dose. Now, toxic doesn't mean fatal. Toxic means it can have deleterious effects.
Right.
So that lowest toxic dose is the lowest dose at which harmful effects can be detected. And for fluoride, that number is 3 milligrams per kilogram of body weight per day. All right.
Okay.
So remember that number. Now, if we assume the average toddler weighs about 12 and a half kilograms, Colin did this in the EU, so these are all metric units.
Sure.
And we're talking about killing two of these kids, then we need, you know, 2 times 3 milligrams times 12.5 milligrams per kilogram, blah, blah, blah. That gives us about 75 milligrams.
This really demonstrates how exciting math is over a podcast, doesn't it?
Hence the blah, blah, blah. So again, that 75 milligrams of fluoride is not a lethal dose. That's just enough that could cause some ill effects. All right. Now, at the high end of the spectrum, the lowest dose that has ever been recorded for killing someone was 4,000 milligrams. And that was to kill an adult in Canada. Canadians are probably easier to kill. I don't know. No, I apologize to our Canadian listeners. I'm kidding.
Why did you just look up?
What?
You just looked up when you said our Canadian listeners.
Oh, because they're above
we're
us.
In the United States.
Yeah. And I get it.
That's a good bit.
Another where in the world is Perry Romanowski? So anyway, what does all this mean? So somewhere between 75 milligrams and 4,000 milligrams of fluoride could be fatal if you ingested it. So, how much fluoride is in a tube of toothpaste? Well, Colin ran those numbers, and you know, that's established in the monograph how much fluoride you can use.
Tells you how much you have to use, actually.
Right, and so it comes down to a large tube of toothpaste has about 150 milligrams of fluoride. So that is a lot closer to that lower limit of 75 milligrams that, you know, may or may not make you sick. And a long way from that upper limit of 4,000, you know, milligrams that can kill you. So, you know, the bottom line is, you know, should you let your kid chow down on an entire tube of toothpaste? Probably not. But, you know, should you freak out if the kid swallows some toothpaste? It doesn't really seem that's the case. Now, of course, you know, put a call into your poison control center, check with your doctor if you're really concerned. But this doesn't seem like, oh, my God, you know, there's a tube of toothpaste sitting on the counter that's, you know, lethal to a child. Yeah, that seems a bit exaggerated.
But now if your kid has eaten 40 tubes of toothpaste, then you should worry.
That's a different story. Yeah. So again, I love this kind of analysis that breaks down the numbers. I also love it because it was something that was done by Colin with, you know, whom I'm hoping to eventually replace you on the show with Perry. So.
That's right. I'm supposed to be working on my British accent.
And that's not being mean either.
Well, you know, speaking of being mean, Randy, I'm looking at the clock, and it's time for you to stop talking.
Ouch.
No, that's we've come to the end of the show. I hope you have enjoyed this. You know, we have a few more beauty stories, but we'll save those for next time, eh?
All right. Well, I have certainly enjoyed it. And yeah. Do we want to just remind people quickly, follow us on social media, visit our blog,
thebeautybrains.com. And we have Twitter, right. The Beauty Brains, and we have a Facebook page. So, yeah, follow us on that and validate us in life, really. And iTunes reviews.
Yes, please leave us an iTunes reviews. All right, excellent. Well, Perry, thanks again for another fantastic show. And to everybody out there listening, until next week, remember, be brainy about your beauty.